Okay, we're up to Parshas Re'eh, and a quick outline, as written by Rabbi Aaron Tendler, says that Rishon and Sheni is where Moshe gives instructions to totally eradicate any remnant of idolatry amongst the people, and strengthen every aspect of serving Hashem. Moshe tells them that any korban that you want to bring, right, has got to be eventually only in the Mokon, the Beis HaMikdash. And he says, doing it not wherever you want, but in a central place, right, you're going away from being self-indulging. In other words, I have a need to bring a korban, and instead you're serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're acting with greater humility and selflessness. And we're told by Moshe that there's a greater danger to our uniqueness with our mitzvahs. Somehow, Moshe identifies an innate desire that at times we want to compromise, and we want to assimilate other notions into the form of Jewish worship, and he notes the fact that the Chashmonaim had to basically cleanse the Beis HaMikdash from paganism. In Shlishi and Revi'i, again, another warning against taking any pagan practices, warning us that there could be a false prophet that we have to deal with. There could be idolatrous missionaries trying to entrap us. And we have the halacha of the Ir HaNidachas, the city that they call it the apostate city that had to be destroyed. They and their material belongings. The lesson, we're told, is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us the Tuva Olam, the good of the world, to use according to his instructions. However, when we take what is our material gifts and use them to serve false idols, right, we've now in effect stolen, and neither we nor our belongings nor have any longer the right to remain in the world. Hamishi Shishi Shvi details mitzvahs that distinguish us from every other nation. We have kashrus. We have the laws of Truma and Maaser, the tithing. We have Shemitah, right, the sabbatical year when we can't plant. We have an issur against lending to a Jew with interest. There are special halachas that if somebody acquires an eved Jew who's a slave, it's like he got a master. He's got to treat him better than himself. And it then deals with what happens with the firstborn of an animal. What's the halacha? And then we know that we lain re'eh on the Yom Tovim. Right? And we have specific details about Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot. Rav Shamshon Rafal Hirsch points out something that we could notice too, right? Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are not included in this list of Yamam Tovim. And Rav Hirsch says there's a reason for this. Rav Hirsch says the way Yontif was practiced in the desert and in Eretz Yisroel was different. Okay? That happened regarding Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. However, when we come to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah, the mitzvah blowing shofar, the same way Moshe Rabbeinu blew shofar, Klal Yisroel blew shofar when they were in Eretz Yisroel. The same way Yom Kippur was practiced when they had the Mishkan, that's the same way it was practiced when the Beis HaMikdash existed. And he says that's why it's not delineated here, because it's spoken of in other places. Going back to the beginning of Ray, Moshe says, doing mitzvos brings bracha to the Jewish people and the individual Jew, right? And transgressing, unfortunately, leads to a curse. The author of the Midrash says, as Moshe turns to Yehoshua, and he says, after you lead the people across the Jordan, you are to put half of them on Mountain of Gerizim, and the other on the mountain of Ava. And he says, I will soon reveal to you what blessings and curses are to pronounce there. He says, the Esnoyim Latera, which is, my mind blank, says that Moshe only briefly alludes to brachas and kolos here, and we know we're going to have a delineation of them later on in the Sefer. Moshe says to all of the Jewish people, in living almost every aspect of daily life, we are faced with choices, whether to do HaKadosh Baruch Hu's prescribed manner of behaving or not. And Moshe says, this gives the Jewish people the choice to cause bracha or alternatively curse, life or death. Each Moshe points out and he says, yes, you have Bechira. Everybody has free choice. But even though God has given free choice, God is not indifferent to what choice you make. God begs you, tells you, entreats from you to do what's right. Go ahead. But you've got the choice, make the choice to pursue good and end up with life. He gives a metaphor that a long line of cars were winding its way up to the country. The drivers were getting restless, and he says they wanted to shorten the trip by taking a modern 5-6-lane highway that had been constructed instead of going along the old bumpy country road. But when they came to the entrance of the highway, they saw an old farmer waving his cap and saying, take the old road. The winds came, there was tornado-like events, and there's branches strewn all over the new highway. You can't get through. There were certain drivers who looked at the farmer and were skeptical. And they decided they're going to go on the new road because, for whatever reason, they chose not to listen. Others said, we'll go with the tried and true method. Those who ignored the old farmer's warning suffered a long and wearisome journey. They had to get out of their cars and jointly move stuff. It was a total pain. The others kept going at a slower speed, but they were able to get there, right? And they, in effect, saved time. Hashem says, the road of Torah and Mitzvahs may seem like that old highway. You've got pitfalls along the way, right? You can't speed through life. But the tried and tested means will get you to your destination. The path of following a sinful methodology may often look smoother and may often be very, very, you know, you want it, enticing. But Hashem says, choose wisely. Moshe then began to teach and review a number of mitzvos. Again, and we see this so many times, right? He said, careful, stay away from idol worship. Moshe said to the Jewish people, Eretz Yisrael, unfortunately, is full of objects that were built for idol worship. There's no way you can have a land that's going to be Kadosh, that's going to have a base of Migdash as its central spot, if you leave all the schmutz around. You've got to go out, look for, and destroy whatever elements of idolatry you find. Altars, stones, trees they worship, demolish, burn. You have to cast them into the sea. Do not leave any trace thereof. And he points out the author that we actually have a mitzvah that whenever we can, in every Jewish community, if we see idolatrous items, right, we have to get rid of them. But in the area of Eretz Yisrael, the palace of the king, it's even more important. It says that Curtis Rufus asked Rabbi Akiva, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say he hates Esau? He said, I'll answer you tomorrow. When he came before the emperor the next day, Rabbi Akiva said, last night I had a dream. What was it? The king, or Turnus Rufus, the general, asked. He said, I had two dogs. I named them Rufus and Rufina. The emperor was going to go nuts. I'm going to kill you. How could you dare your dogs after me in my night and my wife? And Rabbi Akiva said, there are so many parallels between the way you live and a dog. You eat like a dog. You procreate like a dog, and you die like a dog. But as soon as I called you a dog, you became incensed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Almighty, is the creator and eternal, the universe. He's eternal and all-powerful. And yet, you goyim come along, and you take getchkes, you take idols and trees, and you say, well, these are our gods. You expect him to tolerate that? That's why he said, I hate Esav. The Torah continues to tell us that idolatry is one of the three cardinal sins. The intellect that people were given, especially Jews, right, was not given to us to deny HaKadosh Baruch Hu's uniqueness, to try to find other powers. One who serves idols is like denying the entire Torah. Well, the Jews had the responsibility to eradicate, to the extent possible, any idolatrous items, vestiges that existed. And we're told, we're given a contrast, that you cannot take the same actions with regard to things that are holy. You can't destroy the Torah scrolls. You can't destroy shuls, right? You can't destroy tefillin. Things that aren't usable any longer and are holy, we've got to bury them. We can't even write HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name. You're also forbidden to take any stones out of an altar built for Hashem. Moshe did mention, it says, to the Jewish people that there are going to be different times in Jewish history when we have the Mikdash, and we have the Beis, and we have the Beis Hamikdash. And there will be other times when you won't. When you don't, there is the ability to have what we call bamos, private altars, on which you can bring a korban to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And this could happen up until the building of the Beis Hamikdash, which, when the first Beis Hamikdash arose, there would no longer ever be the permission to build a bama, a private altar, the way Adam had, the way Noach had, Avram, etc. We were also given now the heter to eat meat, what we call choyl, right? To eat meat without bringing a korban. Initially, the only way you could eat meat was if it was from a korban. Now the idea of shchitas choyl, of allowing meat to be slaughtered properly for common consumption, became permitted. The caveat was that we know we have to get rid of all blood. We cannot drink blood. We can't allow the blood to remain within the meat. Right? We're told that at Har Sinai, Hashem taught Moshe the laws of shechita, of slaughtering, teaching that an animal, a cow, right, and then the other animal, a sheep, a lamb, there's a requirement to cut most of the windpipe and the gullet, right? And then there's other rules with regarding the shechita of the birds. Moshe said, if you want to eat meat or a bird, you've got to shecht first. And fish do not need shechita. An animal that's not shechted, which would be a kosher species, cow, lamb, goat, etc., lamb, right? If it dies, it's called an avela. And we are not allowed to eat the vela. It's given to the dogs. There's a bracha that he taught the people when a shechet shechts animals. Shlomo Melech asked, right? Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu care where on the neck the animal was cut? In other words, he wanted to discern the logic. All we see that Shlomo Melech said, this is a formula, right, that somehow purifies and elevates the Jew. The Medrash says, God issued mitzvos to test Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to see, will we follow the details? Will we do it appropriately? And if we do, we gain reward. But there's another thing that Shlomo Melech said, in which he says, you will not necessarily feel this, but please be aware that the mere or the very observance of a mitzvah is beneficial. Every mitzvah enhances the spirituality of the person who did it. And Shlomo Melech, it says, had to be the one to teach it. He was the smartest of all, because obviously not, let's say, the common people obviously would not be able to feel this instant elevation in their kedusha, in their holiness. Moshe then adds another warning. He says, the nations who lived in the land of Canaan are being expelled because of their evil practices. Never imitate their practices in the way they worshipped. Don't even try to figure out what they did. One of the reasons that idolatry was so popular was because it allowed you, in many cases, to get rid of inhibitions. If you turn sexual debauchery into a religion, imagine how many adherents you can get. You're now doing a great thing. And Moshe said to the people, look carefully at how despicable these people have become. There are those that burn their children as sacrifices, right, to their so-called gods. There were even heathens who felt the greatest thing they could do was to have a sacrifice of the parents they had. All of this was a degree of despicability that existed with the seven nations, and that's why God gave them a choice. Either, he said, they desist from all manner that they continued, or they leave the land, or they be destroyed. And the Jewish people, under the guidance of Yehoshua, were being given the task to implement these commandments. Okay, that's today's shiur.